Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Dr. Lawyer, idiot chief. For my life with songs of grief, with the yellow fear and fearless eyes. You temper all the times, the times I've
tried. Two Dudes Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer, dude, and a judge.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am still just a dude. Well, Mike, I'm glad you didn't get defrocked, that you are still actually a judge.
Yeah, I was not defrocked or impeached or anything like that. Just last week, I happened to be a little under the weather, so I was not operating at my top potential, I think, last week.
You were not at your peak, huh?
I was not.
Well, hopefully you're at your peak today and ready to make up for your judgeship.
I don't think I've been at my peak since I was about 21 or 22, to be perfectly honest with you. But
I don't think I ever had a peak. I just think I had a valley.
Well, if you got a valley, then by de facto, you had to have had a peak. Unless you're just on a hill.
I'm on a downhill spiral from day one. I peaked when I was born, and it's been downhill ever since.
But yeah, last week I was sick. I for some reason I decided to go for a run Saturday morning, and I ended up getting a bit of a coughing fit after the run. Started getting some chest congestion, everything along those lines, and ended up feeling kind of sick. So I decided to stay home from work. Went and got tested for COVID, and it was negative. And felt really tired the whole time too. I would have sworn I had COVID, but I did not. So,
well, I'm glad you were negative.
Me too.
That would have been bad. Have my partner laid up with COVID.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting. I was trying to get caught up on some work today, and I was responding to an email, and evidently I'd actually responded to it last week. I was just so under the weather, I didn't even realize I had.
Yeah, this is a bad time to get just a regular illness because everybody will go, ah, he's got the COVID. Ah, get away from him.
Yeah.
And then everybody goes into quarantine and there's 55 people in quarantine and getting tested.
Oh, I know. And it seems like it's everywhere right now. It's crazy times.
Yeah, it sure is. But, you know, two vaccines are in final stages, hopefully coming out. One 90% effective and the one today they said was about 95% effective.
Well, that'd be great. I'm looking forward to it.
Me too.
So speaking of crazy times, I don't know if you heard or not, but we actually had an election a couple of weeks ago.
Really? Where at?
Yeah, it was here in the United States.
Oh, was it a big one or was it just a local thing where they were electing like, you know, the dog catcher or something?
Yeah, city council, you know, small potatoes. Yeah.
Small potatoes.
But as a result of the election, there have been a lot of lawsuits filed in federal and state courts. President Trump has had a team of attorneys, and the Republican Party has had a lot of attorneys filing lawsuits over all the alleged inconsistencies with the vote.
So he seems to think that there is massive voter fraud that has taken place in a bid to unseat him unjustly from his seat as president.
Unjustly. Un-Americanly.
Yeah, it was. If they hadn't counted all the votes in some places, then he'd have won. And if they had kept counting some more votes in some other places, then he'd have won.
Yeah, a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
Yeah. So they had protesters outside the counting places where some of them were chanting, "Count all the votes, count all the votes." And then the other ones are chanting, "Stop counting votes, stop counting votes, don't count those votes."
Seems a little inconsistent, if you ask me. But.
Yeah, I mean, it's working both ways there. What's going on?
One of the things that you brought up is, I think you said, was fraud. There's been some fraud in the election, and that's a basis for a lot of these lawsuits. So I thought it would be a good idea to kind of get into whenever you're pleading a complaint against someone and you allege fraud and give a bit of background about that, because there's some different rules that apply whenever there's a claim of fraud.
Well, that's good. So we're going to talk about voter fraud and penalties for it and all that kind of stuff, huh?
Well, I'm not going to talk about voter fraud and penalties. I'm going to talk more about just lawsuits in general and how you plead fraud and things like that. Maybe you can tell us about voter fraud penalties. I've never actually had a voter fraud case.
They're in the penal code.
Oh, okay. So whenever you file a lawsuit, you file what's called a complaint. And we've talked about that before in episodes, and that's how you start your civil action against somebody. And what the complaint is that you lay out the allegations in there, and you ask for the certain relief that you want from the court. And then what will happen is the person, whoever you sue, once they're served, they will file an answer, or sometimes they'll file a motion to dismiss. And we talked about a motion to dismiss last week with the anti-SLAPP lawsuit.
Right.
What's going on here is I'm pretty sure is a bunch of motions to dismiss as well with these lawsuits, saying that hey, these aren't legally sufficient. So, whenever you plead your complaint or you plead your cause of action, there's two standards that might apply for a person whenever you're pleading, you're writing things out, and one is notice pleading, and the other is fact pleading. The difference between them is kind of important whenever you're talking about looking at a motion to dismiss. Notice pleading allows a person to state their claim very generally, and they don't need to assert actual detailed facts to support their cause of action. All they have to do is put in the essential elements. For example, like a negligence, all you'd have to say if you're doing notice pleading is that the defendant owed a duty to the plaintiff. The defendant breached that duty to the plaintiff.
Duty.
I knew it was coming.
Well, you better get to the bathroom then.
And so you just lay out those causes of action, like or not the elements of the cause of action like that. And you don't have to say how they breached the duty. I mean, you could say, well, they negligently operated their motor vehicle. I mean, on a certain date in a certain county or something like that. But it can be very bare bones. It doesn't have to say they turned left when they should have turned right. It can just be very general notice pleading type things. And that is the general rule for federal rules under the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure 8. And all you have to have is a short and plain statement of the claim showing that the pleader is entitled to relief. And that's under Rule 8 of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. Now, fact pleading, you actually have to put a lot more specific things into your cause of action. And fact pleading states that one must assert detailed facts that underlie the cause of action. That means you must have comprehensive details when pleading facts that you're alleging. Now, there's been two different cases under the federal rules, which are Twombly and Iqbal, which are requiring heightened pleading standards. So the notice pleading, although it was very prevalent under the federal rules, it's been tightened up a little bit. So you do have to be a bit more fact specific when you're doing federal pleading now, but so notice pleading isn't really the way to go. You have to be a bit more specific, but whenever you're pleading fraud or special matters, you actually have to use fact pleading, and you have to state with specificity or particularity what it is that you're saying. And that's under Rule 9B of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. And it states that whenever you're filing a lawsuit with special matters, that it has to be pled with greater specificity and are subject to what courts are calling heightened scrutiny. And one of those matters that is a special matter is fraud. So if you're alleging fraud or mistake, the party must state with particularity the circumstances constituting the fraud or mistake. And so what the problem is with a lot of these lawsuits that I've seen is that they're kind of not really stating with specificity the actual fraud that took place. They're just making these kind of generalized blanket statements and saying, well, fraud took place, it wasn't right, there was something that happened. And that's why a lot of these lawsuits are actually being thrown out on motions to dismiss, because they're not pleading them with the requisite amount of specificity that you need to have in order to maintain this lawsuit.
Yeah, I mean, most of them, like the last count that I heard, there was like 11 of them that got thrown out on the initial pleading or filing of the complaint or whatever. They were dismissed because, like, they asked the lawyer representing the complaint, they said, so are you alleging that voter fraud took place? No. Well, do you have evidence that voter fraud took place? No. Okay, case dismissed. But yet they were filing that it was voter fraud had taken place.
Well, and that's what the thing. They were putting them in the pleadings, but then they weren't actually supporting them with actual facts and what you need to do. You know, I've been put in that place with clients before where a client says, like, hey, here's what took place. Here's how we need to argue this. And I have the evidence to back it up. And I'm like, okay, let's go with it. And then the evidence never comes. And you're waiting and you're waiting and you're waiting. And it's like, hey, what about that evidence you were talking about there? Oh, yeah, I'm working on it. You know, just it never comes. So, you know, you have to be very upfront with your clients before you plead certain things. You need to make sure that you actually have the meat and potatoes to back it up if you're going to throw it on the plate.
Yeah, I think the only one that they got changed in any of those lawsuits was while the counting was going on. They complained that they were having to stand 10 feet away, and that was too far to be able to actually see what they were doing. So the observers, so they, mm-hmm. they ruled in their favor and said they could move to within 6 feet.
Yeah, but you know exactly the thing. How is that fraud? There's no fraud there. It's just
right.
You're saying, now, I mean, is there an appearance of impropriety if you're making observers stand farther back? Yeah, possibly. I mean, that doesn't sound right. I mean, you should let them, if they're observing, they should be in a position where they can actually observe, right?
Right.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that there's fraud.
Right. Well, you also have to remember that we're in a pandemic, and part of the pandemic is social distancing. So you don't want to necessarily squeeze people in tightly together.
Yeah. Now, when you're talking about the lawyers that are arguing these cases for the president in this situation, they are governed by rules of professional conduct. Now, it varies state by state, but Rule 3.1 of the American Bar Association's Model Rules of Professional Conduct states that a lawyer shall not bring an action unless a basis exists in law and fact for doing so. So lawyers have to use due diligence to inform themselves of the facts of the case and reasonably determine that a good faith argument be made in defense of their client's claim. So a lawyer can actually be violating professional conduct if they're putting these claims out there without any kind of support. So it's a very slippery slope for these lawyers, which is probably why a lot of them are saying when they're asked, the judge is asking them on the spot, hey, do you have any evidence? They're just saying no, because they don't want to, their law license is not worth losing it over this. So,
yeah, there was one in Pennsylvania there just in the last couple of days where they filed it and said there was 700,000 votes that were counted and there were no Republican observers in the room, and they wanted those votes disallowed. And then they came back and here were these affidavits from all these Republican observers that were in the room while those ballots were counted. So then when they said, are you saying that there was no one allowed in there? The lawyer said, no, we're not saying that. Yeah. They were in there, and there's affidavits to that effect.
Well, I mean, that might be the case where this is what they were told by their client. Hey, here's what took place. You need to hurry up and file that. So the attorney, in a rush to try to file something, maybe didn't check up and do their due diligence to make sure that this was what was taking place.
But that's what I mean, though. It's all been very cut and dried. It hadn't been like there have been these striking arguments back and forth, and then the judge had to rule in favor of one or the other. It's just been very, nope, sorry, no proof of that. Okay, case dismissed.
Now, another interesting thing is Rule 11B of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. And what this rule does is it allows the court to sanction lawyers who file frivolous lawsuits. So not only just attorney's fees for against their clients, but an attorney who brings that too can be personally liable if it's super frivolous and just on its face, just ridiculous. So in certain circumstances, if they're filing something that is just totally outlandish, the attorney themselves could end up on the hook for paying sanctions and court costs and attorney's fees for the other side for having to defend it.
Hmm.
Now, when we're talking about particularity, whenever you're pleading special matters like fraud, what that means is that you have to actually put the who, the what, the when, the where, and the how of how the fraud took place. Just the vague kind of amorphous allegations of misconduct don't count. Now, a lot of the ones, and there, I saw one article where there was some post-it note that was on a file that somebody had seen that supposedly said something about fraud. And so the judge The judge said, well, wait a second, that sounds an awful lot like hearsay, which is governed under Federal Rules of Evidence 802. And it did. So a lot of the things, even if they're trying to allege the different particularity, it's going to fall under hearsay and therefore not be admissible because it's not actual something that can bring into court. Mm-hmm. So there's another problem for these lawsuits as well when they have that. So the thing is that, you know, the lawyers that are filing these things, for the most part, I mean, they're not incompetent. They went to law school, they graduated, they're admitted to the bar. A lot of them are from bigger firms. So why do you think they're filing them? It doesn't make any sense, really. I mean, I guess maybe obviously they can make money and charge fees for doing it, which, I mean, if they don't do it, somebody else probably will. So there's that argument. But the farther they go into the lawsuit representing these frivolous lawsuits, I think it could tarnish their reputation a little bit. So it's kind of, I don't really understand why they're filing these kinds of lawsuits when there's not anything to back them up.
Yeah, I mean, they should at least say, well, show me some of the evidence that you have that I can go into court with. And because they're not, I mean, it's not like they're arguing something and losing. They're just coming right up and saying, no, I know we filed it and we said that, but never mind.
Well, I saw some articles today where several attorneys' firms have backed out of representing these cases. They filed motions to withdraw and all kinds of stuff. And actually, some of the cases have been dismissed by the plaintiff themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They're just saying, you know what, we're just going to walk away from it.
Well, that was one of the reasons why I wanted us to do this episode is because that's still floating out here. And as hard as it is for me to believe, I've got to admit there are people out there, a lot of people, that they're not just saying that because they're being bad sports or their guy lost. They believe in their hearts that it was a rigged election and all these fraudulent votes and that we imported illegal aliens in that cast votes and 30,000 dead people voted and all these kind of things. They all took place. They're sure because they've read reports about it and they've heard the president say these things took place, that they were bringing in blank ballots and filling them all out for Joe Biden and everything.
Yeah.
And the history of voter fraud in America, you've got to go back to like the 1800s where you had massive voter fraud of anything. And even at that, it was only influencing local elections. It didn't influence a national election.
I mean, I think it's safe to say there probably were some votes out there which were fraudulently cast.
Yes.
We have too large of a nation. There's no way that there weren't some fraudulent votes cast. But is it so widespread that it would change the results of the election? That's the real issue, and I don't think it would. So, and there's going to be some recounts that are going to happen too, which I want to talk about that and some other things. But I think before that, we actually have a motion today before the court.
Why, yes, there is. If we'd like to ask permission, your lordship, to approach the bench and pay for court costs or votes, whichever costs the most.
Well, you didn't plead your motion with specificity.
Oh,
you gave me some notice, so let's just go ahead and go with it.
All right. Well, we have with us today our good friends at BetterHelp. That's H-E-L-P, BetterHelp.
Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals?
Yeah, pandemic and voter fraud.
Well, one of them's real. And BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your licensed professional therapist.
You can start communicating in under 48 hours.
It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online.
There's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas.
And the service is available for clients worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor.
You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy, wearing a mask and reading outdated magazines.
Yeah, we hate wearing a mask and reading outdated magazines.
The masks are okay. It's the magazines that get you.
Well, I don't like wearing them, but I do it anyway. I don't like the magazines either, but I read them anyway too. So. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed.
It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available.
BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today.
You can visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily at www.betterhelp.com/reviews.
Visit betterhelp.com/court, that's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, and join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional.
In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states.
And there's a special offer for court-appointed listeners. You get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/court.
That's right. 10% off for all court-appointed listeners at BetterHelp, that's HELP.com/court. Mike and Tommy want you to get better help today.
Now, one of the interesting things that I read, this didn't actually have to do with the lawsuit, but it had to do with the election and recounts and contesting the election and everything, is that in Wisconsin, President Trump will have to pay $7.9 million if he wants a statewide recount of the unofficial results in Wisconsin, which showed him losing by about 20,500 votes. And the interesting thing about this is it's four times higher than the cost of the recount 4 years ago. And officials have said that the cost has been driven up by the expenses related to conducting a recount during the coronavirus pandemic. So there's actual costs that are associated for a state to have to go through this. This estimate is based on 72 counties having to do the recount beginning as soon as this Thursday and being done no later than December 1st. Now, the interesting thing about it is that recounts are not automatic under Wisconsin law, but any losing candidate who is within 1 point of the winner can request one. Trump lost by 6/10 of a point based on the unofficial results. Candidates must pay for recounts if they are more than 0.25 points behind the winner. So it's a very small designation. You have to be within 1% to even get a recount. And if you're more than 0.25, you got to pay for it if you want to do it.
Well, and probably adding to that cost is security, because they probably have to have more security now than other times because you've got armed protesters outside the gates, outside the doors where they're doing these in a lot of cases, and they have to escort these poll workers back and forth to their cars and stuff to assure their safety. And a lot of these people are volunteers that are doing that, and they're basically putting their lives in danger.
For sure. I mean, it's a thankless job that they're doing.
Yeah. Another thing that might be adding to the cost as well is that there is so many more votes this year than in previous elections.
Oh, for sure. I mean, the voter turnout this year was, I mean, outstanding. Tons
yeah.
Tons of people.
Yeah. They say it was like 65%, and normally we're well below 50.
Yeah. Which still, I mean, I don't think 65% is anything to write home about, but, you know.
It's the most people we've ever had turn out for an election.
Yeah. I find it hard to believe that only 65% of the people of this nation thought that this was an important enough election to vote. It boggles my mind, Tommy. It boggles my mind.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
So, well, if there was some voter fraud and things that are found, what are some of the penalties and things that can happen for that?
Well, according to U.S. Code 20511, criminal penalties, a person, including an election official, who in any election for federal office, one, knowingly and willfully intimidates, threatens, or coerces, or attempts to intimidate, threaten, or coerce any person from registering to vote or voting or attempting to register or vote, or urging or aiding any person to register to vote or to attempt to register to vote, exercising any right chapter thereof, knowingly and willfully deprives, defrauds, or attempts, or the procurement of submission of voter registration applications, the procurement, casting, or tabulation of ballots that are known by the person to be materially false, fictitious, or fraudulent under the laws of the state in which the election is held shall be fined in accordance with Title 18, which fines shall be paid into the general fund of the Treasury, and notwithstanding any other law, or imprisoned not more than 5 years or both. Plus, they lose their right to vote in any future elections.
Yeah, so let me surmise law there. If you screw with the vote or the election in any way, it's going to be 5 years and a large fine. And you won't get to vote anymore.
Right. So, I mean, why would anybody risk that just to go in and cast a vote? And, you know, the voter fraud that you've seen, like that influences national elections, like in some third world or dictatorial type countries, mm-hmm. it's by the party that's in power. Those are the ones that have the machine in place and have the people in place. They can rig an election and influence. It's not the outsiders that are trying to gain control. They don't have access to all the things that control that. Yeah. So.
Well, that's true. But I would not consider the Democratic Party the outsider in this equation, though. I mean, I think obviously Trump was the incumbent, but I think that either party could influence an election illegally if they wanted to here in this country, if they were of the mind to do so.
Now, the Brennan Center for Justice, which is in a branch of New York University School of Law, they reviewed elections that had been studied for voter fraud, and this was over a 14-year period. And they found that out of 1 billion ballots cast, they found 31 credible instances of impersonation fraud. So that was over 14 years and over a billion ballots, and they had 31 cases.
Not a lot.
Right. And they said that most of the voter fraud that does take place are people voting.
Southern West Virginia.
No. I don't even think it's as bad there as it used to be. It used to be bad there. They would buy your vote. They'd give you a half pint of whiskey go in and vote the way that you wanted. But
That's why liquor stores were closed in West Virginia on election day.
Yeah, so they can't get more whiskey to pay people. But the private vote kind of took care of that. It used to be in the old days, you didn't really have a private vote. You just kind of spoke it out loud to the election official who you're voting for, and they marked it down. Yeah. Now it's a private vote. Nobody's in there with you. So you could take the pint of whiskey, say, sure, I'll vote your way, then go in and vote for whoever the hell you want to.
Yeah.
So you can't influence them that way, you know, anymore. But They said that most of the fraud that took place was incidental. There were people that, like, there's certain ones, felons that went and voted and didn't know they couldn't, or they hadn't paid their fines. There's certain ones that you can regain the ability to vote, but you have to make sure you pay all your fines or whatever that you were due first. But a lot of those, they mistakenly went in and voted, but you're not going to have the numbers that are going to change the outcome of the presidential election. You're talking about a handful, maybe four or five.
Yeah. One interesting thing I saw, and this had a lot to do with since we had more mail-in ballots this year, was that if people mailed in a ballot and they got it there early and there was some sort of technical problem with it, like they forgot to
sign something, whatever.
Yeah. And they would actually reach back out to the voter and say, hey, you forgot to do this. You can correct it. And so there were some that were corrected ballots like that. And one of the arguments that was being put forth by Trump's lawyers and the Republican Party in some of these lawsuits was that, well, only the Democrat-controlled counties were the ones that let people correct these things. You know, the Republican parties didn't really do that. Well, the thing is, it's like, well, why didn't you? I mean, isn't it really what we want here in the United States, everyone's vote to count? So why are we trying to, like, throw people out on technicalities or fault people for trying to get everyone's vote to count?
Right. Well, and the other thing is there are no Democrat-controlled polling places or Republican-controlled ones. You have a same number of Republicans and Democrats in each one observing, counting votes, the right to cure them, and everything else. What you were seeing was there was a heavier number of Democrat voters in the mail-in ballots because they were all encouraged to do that. Trump encouraged his base to go on election day and vote. That's the only sure way to get it in there. Go to election day and vote. Otherwise, your vote might end up in the trash can somewhere.
Right. Well, I think it was a disinformation campaign that began a month ago.
Well, that's true, but it came back and it backfired. You know, because I'll tell you the truth, like for me, I've never mailed in voted in my life. I've always gone and cast my vote on election day. But because of the pandemic, that when they offered me the chance to do that, it didn't have anything to do with anything, you know, under the table, but I didn't have to go stand in line with a bunch of other people, and some of them were idiots and not wearing masks and stuff like that. I didn't have to go stand in line with them. I just got to fill out my ballot in the comfort of my home and mail it back in.
Yeah.
That seemed like a pretty good deal to me.
Yeah. Well, and it has been used quite a bit for the military in the past as well. So, I mean, it's not something that's, you know, completely unheard of. So, I don't know. I never did mail-in ballots, and I still haven't. I did mine in person as well. But I don't know. I don't really see a problem with it.
In the Philadelphia one, there were several things that they filed, or no, it was the Wisconsin one that they filed that they said were happening. And like one of them was that they saw dates on there that were like 1900. And they were saying, oh, well, how many 120-year-old people came in and, you know, mailed in votes? These were all these dead people voting. Well, what it was is some of these birth dates didn't match up right. And so to mark them so they could go back and correct them, they marked them with a 1900 date that would stand out so they could go back, get the correct date, and fill that in. But the rumor got out that this was people that were, you know, creating votes for it.
Yeah. One of the interesting things that as I've been following these different lawsuits, I mean, there's been, I think when I was counting them, like 20, 22, something like that, lawsuits which have been filed, and a lot, I mean, the cases that have been dismissed and the adverse rulings to Trump, they've come from different judges that were Democrats, Republicans, appointed by Democrats, appointed by Obama, appointed by Reagan, appointed by Bush. You know, I mean, it seems like it's not any kind of partisan ruling. It just seems like it's coming across the board that the judges are not looking at the political spectrum. I mean, they're making rulings based on the law, which makes me feel pretty comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I always felt, too, like, even if this got to the Supreme Court, I mean, I know that Trump has had several nominees placed on the court recently, and it's, you know, a conservative court. But I do put my faith in the lawyers that are there on serving on the court, that they're going to do the right thing and rise above any kind of political back and forth about this, because it's a higher calling than that. And I think that most lawyers that ascend to that position probably would feel that way.
Well, you know, there was a lot of rumors going around. Well, look, Trump's got control of the Supreme Court now. He just put that Amy, whatever, Comey Barron or whatever her name is, on there. So now what he wants to do is just put the election in front of the Supreme Court and let them decide, and they'll vote for him since he put more of them on there. I can't believe that anybody that is good enough to make it to the Supreme Court would tarnish themselves by doing something that's just blatantly wrong.
Yeah, they don't want to be on the wrong side of history.
No, I mean, there's a lot of people that look at that, and sure, they could probably get away with it, but what kind of credibility would you have? You know, it would destroy everything that our Supreme Court is supposed to stand for.
Yeah, I don't see it happening. That would probably be the death of America if that did actually happen, in my mind. That would be pretty disheartened.
On one of the other examples, there was a viral video where they found this 118-year-old guy supposedly voted absentee, and they were jumping up and down saying, see, here's a dead guy. We looked him up. He's dead. Here he voted. Well, it ended up that the polling had just picked up the wrong one. It was the son had voted that had the same name as the dad. And yes, the dad was dead, but the son was very much alive. And he's the one that voted. They just missed the junior or the third or whatever it was on there,
right,
and put it under the wrong guy. So most of these, well, all of these have, you know, legitimate explanations for why they happen. But people were looking for conspiracies and looking for things to jump up and down about.
Yeah, and there's no way there's 5 million of instances like that happening. I mean, it's not going to happen. Even supposing that there is fraud, there's no way it's that widespread.
Now, there is one other thing that probably did occur a lot more than you have in any other election, and it's because of the mail-in votes, and that's that there's people that voted, mailed in their vote, and then they died prior to Election Day.
Yeah.
So you did have some dead people that voted. Now, it's up to the states, but some states have laws that say if you die before Election Day, even if you marked it and mailed it in before you died, your vote doesn't count.
Yeah.
There's other ones, though, that say if you mark that ballot and send it in, then, you know, you're good to go. That yeah. vote will still count.
My personal belief is that if you pass away before Election Day, then your vote should not count.
Well, yeah, if you didn't have mail-in votes, then it wouldn't. But, you know.
I think even with mail-in votes, I don't think it should count.
But the thing is even though you may have had, over the country, you may have had, let's say 500 people that did that, maybe 1,000.
Yeah.
But it's not going to change a vote. By the time you scatter that 1,000 out over the country, it's not going to change any of the margins in any of the areas. So it's a moot point.
Well, and when I say I don't think it should count, I mean, that's my personal opinion. I think that's what the state law should say. If a state law says that it should count, then I think it should count, is what I'm trying to say. Not like I think we should have some sort of, they shouldn't count. But I think my personal belief is that if you pass away before the election day, then you mail it in, that your vote probably shouldn't count. And that's just based on my reasoning. I saw somebody explain it this way, is that you don't get to order food for the entire table if you're not going to be there for the meal.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the way it makes sense to me. You know what I mean? You know, it's the elections for the future. So
they had one other situation where they brought it up and they said, well, look at this one. This is a clear cut case of fraud. This lady, she died 2 days after she requested a ballot. So there's no way that she could have filled this out and mailed it in. Yet here is her completed ballot here. And so they asked, the lady had been living with her daughter and son-in-law, and they asked them, they said, yes, she did request a ballot, and it did come, but neither one of them recalled ever having filled it out or mailed it or anything, but somehow it had gotten filled out and mailed in. So they were saying, well, see, right there, somebody was committing voter fraud. Well, they said, well, yeah, you're right, that her vote should have been cast, but she was supporting Trump.
Yeah.
So they were arguing about how terrible that was. Well, she voted for Trump anyway.
The lieutenant governor of Minnesota, I think it was, he's kind of a interesting guy. And there was a lieutenant governor of another state, I think it was maybe Texas. And he put something on Twitter that basically said, I'll give $1 million to any credible source of voter fraud that took place. And so the lieutenant governor of Minnesota tweeted back at him and said, hey, here's an incident that took place in our state, and it was some voter fraud for Trump. And he said, where's my $1 million?
Yeah.
So, you know, the whole Twitter thing is crazy. This is really the first election in 2016, I didn't pay too much attention to Twitter, but I've been on it a bit more, trying to read people's thoughts and whatnot on there. And one of the interesting things I keep seeing is when they're talking about these lawsuits is that it seems like a lot of the stuff that's being put out there about fraud and problems and all that on social media, there are these very just overarching type complaints of fraud and problems, but there's not any real specificity. They're not actually stating what took place or the problems.
Right.
And again, that's what's not getting them through the door, through the gatekeeper in court, because they're not, Twitter doesn't count for court. I mean, you have to have the rule of law in the courtroom, and it has to be supported by facts and evidence whenever you're doing a fraud claim or something along those lines. So all these social media and public outcry and things like that, it doesn't mean anything in the court of law.
It's all rumors and hearsay. That's what happens. Somebody says, oh, I heard this and somebody told me that. And you've got all these propaganda ministers, some from Iran and some from Russia and stuff like that, that are putting out fake videos and stuff like that. And people see that and just automatically, oh, look there, look at this video. See what they were doing there? Well, it may not even be real. It's just doctored or staged or whatever. But people want to hang their hat on those kind of things. You know, everybody got all up in arms about Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, how slow they were to count their votes. And all these ballots that kept coming in for Biden and none of them were coming in for Trump. Well, you know, if New York and Florida and California can conclude their voting and know their results in one night, why do these other ones take so long? And it's because their Republican-led legislators made the decision that mail ballots could not be counted until election night.
Yeah, only female ballots could be counted before That's right. election night.
That's right. But all the other states, they knew that you can't do that. So they went through all this process and they had all the ballots verified and ready to go through. They just didn't tabulate them yet. But yeah. they had them all there and ready to go through. So as soon as the close of polls, boom, they dump all those in. There's all the mail-in ballots. But the three Republican-led legislature in those three states, they said, we don't want you to count them prior to the polls closing. So they couldn't count them. And that's why it took so long and why they were behind. And they created their own problem with that. And it was all to gain some kind of leverage. I don't even know what the reasoning was, unless they were afraid if those votes were counted ahead of time and people knew it and they saw Biden with the big lead, it might discourage people to come out and vote or something for Trump. I don't know. That's the only reason I can think about it.
Yeah, it doesn't make much sense why you would want to do that.
No. And there were safeguards that were put in place. There was a case in Georgia where there was a county that was a Trump stronghold. It had gone for Trump like 60-40 or something in the 2016 election. Well, here came Biden in the lead by like 3,000 votes. And the people back at headquarters, when they saw this, they said, something's wrong. This wouldn't be right. So they were looking at those results as it came out. Well, it ends up that you have to align the ballots right as they go in and you set it up so that it's just counting those dots, you know, that you make on the ballot. And they didn't have those lined up right. So it wasn't counting those dots right. As soon as they saw it, they knew something was wrong. They went to it. They figured out it was an alignment problem. And actually, the people on the ground had already caught it and already corrected it. They reran the ballots and then got them all corrected. And then the numbers came out. I mean, they know what they're doing. They have processes in place. It's not haphazard that nobody's watching or anything. You know, there are people whose job it is to do, elected officials, whose job it is to do this, and they pride themselves on getting that done correctly. It's not done just willy-nilly.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how these lawsuits play out here in the upcoming weeks, but it's going to have to come to a conclusion here pretty soon.
Yeah. Yeah. The biggest fraud that took place was voter suppression. There was a lot of voter suppression that takes place. Most of your ID laws have to do with voter suppression. They're trying to make it harder for people that would vote a certain way for them to be able to vote. That takes place. When you had a policeman in, I think it was Miami, it was somewhere in Florida, that went in full uniform, you know, his gun and everything, and wearing a mask that said Trump 2020 when he went in to vote at the polling place. Well, you're not allowed to have any kind of politicking stuff in the within like 150 feet of the polling place or something. Yeah. But he went in like that, and that's considered voter intimidation. The people that wanted to stand up, wanted to show up, they show up armed and want to go in and watch people vote to make sure everything's right. You can't do that. You can't just go ahead and appoint yourself an observer. And Trump was encouraging people to do that. And they were arming themselves and going out. They were creating bad circumstances. And that is the definition of voter suppression.
Yeah, actually, Kyle did a NPR piece on that. I don't know if you heard that or not.
No. Huh. But they go through the voter ID laws are supposed to keep people from, you know, voting multiple times or voting for other people. And you have, you know, maybe a handful of that takes place in election, but it's not going to influence anything. And it certainly won't influence a national election. And we don't bus people in from Tijuana or something to come in and cast votes for the candidate of our choice.
Yeah, he actually helped work on this NPR piece on This American Life. It was called Virginia. It was by reporter Mike Giglio. And he went and interviewed militia members in Virginia who went out to polling places and started looking for fraud. And he was kind of telling me about some of the backstory about that. It's kind of an interesting story. If you hear it on This American Life, you might want to check it out. But yeah, they basically went to polling places and they had radios and all kinds of stuff. And they were just watching people go in and out to see if there were any kind of irregularities, any, you know, Antifa, BLM, you know, and this is in rural Virginia. Like, really? That's where this is going to happen?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's kind of a strange situation, but.
It's like everything that happened that was wrong happened on the side that, you know, that lost. They were the ones that did things that really you had to call into question.
Well, I think that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
So Legal Briefs is the part of the show where I ask Tommy different legal questions about what we talked about and see if he can pass the bar, so to speak.
I try not to ever pass a bar. I stop in all the ones I see.
Now, I said there's two different kinds of pleading. Do you remember the different names?
Notice and fact.
That's right. And notice pleading comes from Federal Rules of Civil Procedure Rule 8. And fact pleading comes under Rule 9B of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. And do you know why, what 9B says? Do you remember that?
It says you got to give the who, what, why, when, how, and where.
Pretty much. I mean, it doesn't say that verbatim, but you're pretty much right on there. And whenever there's special matters, they have to be pled with greater specificity, and they're held to higher scrutiny. So you have to particularly state the circumstances that constitute the fraud or the mistake that took place. So if you just say, hey, there was some fraud, that's not going to cut it. You got to say exactly what it is that did it.
What kind of fraud? I don't know. It was so much, I can't even quantify it.
Oh,
it was big. It was bigly fraud.
Bigly fraud. You don't even know.
It was bigly beautiful fraud.
Now, I also talked about the Federal Rules of Evidence 802. And do you remember what that deals with?
No, fraud.
Hearsay. Yeah. And so a lot of the statements that people were making about things that took place, they're hearsay statements, which would not be admissible in court. Now, there are quite a few exceptions to the hearsay rule, but really none of them would apply in this circumstance. So not only is there not going to be any kind of specificity when these things are pled, when it is pled, it seems to be generally hearsay type evidence. It's not admissible.
That's right next to the rule 803, which is the he said, she said rule.
Yeah. And right after 801, which says possession is 9/10 of the law.
That's right. The golden rule.
The golden rule. Now, there's one rule I talked about under the American Bar Association's Model Rules of Professional Conduct. And you remember what that says?
It says that you have to, you can't go in there and just be a clown. You have to have an actual case and proceed in an actual legitimate manner. You can't just go in there and spout off a bunch of stuff that's not true and you know it's not true.
It's the Ronald McDonald rule.
That's right.
Under the American Bar Association's model rule, it's 3.1. And that means that you actually have to have a basis in law or fact for asserting what it is that you're doing. And if you don't, and you come in there and you start just throwing around all these different wild accusations and statements, then you could open yourself up for sanctions. And under the federal rule 11B, you could actually be sanctioned yourself and the lawyer would have to pay the fine. So
I hope they sanction Rudy Giuliani. Talk about a clown.
Yeah, I haven't seen the new Borat movie, but I guess he's in that.
Yeah, he really clowned himself there.
Yeah, he pops up there somewhere.
Yeah, well, I guess you could say that.
Or tried to.
That ship done sailed, I'd say, with him.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, here in the next few weeks with regard to all the election and the lawsuits and things like that. But it seems like right now that they are being dismissed and in mass almost. So,
well, that's true. And, you know, the only ones that are suffering as a result is the American people. That's all. Yeah. Because, you know, there's no transition of power taking place and there's no security briefings taking place. And by the way, we do have a pandemic that's still raging. So, you know, the people that are going to have to handle it, it would be nice for them to have information, because a guy that's on his way out, he's not doing nothing except golfing.
I know. We need something to happen. That's for sure. Cause I tell you what, I don't feel like our interests are being looked out for at this point right now.
No, I don't either. Mom and dad are gone and nobody's left to run the place but the kids.
That's true. But this isn't a house party you want to go to.
No. You don't want to be all up in this house.
No, this is like a meth house.
This is like Project X.
Yeah. I was talking to a police officer. This has been probably a couple of years ago, and they were talking about they had to raid this drug house, and he was talking to somebody else, and he's like, "Yeah, it was just, you know, it was just a good old fashioned crack house." Like, you know, because they don't really see that anymore, because now it's like more about heroin and meth, and it was just a crack house. It's like, just a, you know, simple, good old fashioned crack house. That's all there was to it.
You know, they need me on the police force, because they show a lot of these pictures of these people they arrested for some of these different crimes. And when I see their picture, I know they're guilty of something. So if they just put me on the police force, I could point them out. They could ride me around town. I'd point them out. That guy's a criminal. That guy's a criminal. That one's definitely a criminal.
Yeah, I think they made a movie like that called Minority Report.
Yeah.
Had Tom Cruise in it, where it was basically the thought police. They were just arresting people when they hadn't done anything wrong.
Oh, well, I thought he was a Minority Report because he's so short.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Bim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine offerings.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out though, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude. Hello, and welcome to Tommy's Random Thought. Today's random thought is stimulus payments. Now, I'm not any kind of political expert. As a matter of fact, I know very little about the processes that go into some of these political things. But I do read a lot and watch a lot of news, so I'm aware of current events. We have gotten one stimulus payment since this whole COVID thing broke out almost 9 months ago. It was just $1,200, and by the time it came, we already needed three more of them. The one came after about the first 3 months, but since then, nothing for the last 6 months. Rent and utility bills were held off for about 3 months as well, but that was all. And they were not forgiven, they were just delayed. But you still have to pay it all. So now businesses are closing, people are losing their houses or apartments, and we have more people depending on food programs than ever before. Why didn't these payments come monthly to help everyone out? Do our representatives think that $1,200 replaces 9 months of shutdown? Are they that out of touch to think we can live off of $133 a month? When Trump complains that the election was stolen from him, I say he stole it from himself. If the stimulus checks had been raining down on us and keeping our wallets flush, a lot more people may have been inclined to vote for him. But from his COVID-infested White House balcony, he basically said, "Let them eat cake." Really, he had every excuse in the world to be like the Willy Wonka of cash, handing it out left and right like Pez to help the poor suffering American worker. If he and Mitch McConnell had put together big relief packages for the American public, it would surely have been looked on favorably by a lot of the public. And if Nancy Pelosi in the House refused to cooperate, then Trump could easily have demonized all Democrats for shooting this down, and this would surely have affected Joe Biden. I mean, am I missing something here? Or could it have really been that simple? I kind of got the feeling that Trump was mocking all of us for suffering through setback after setback as far as this virus and our hopes for a return to normal. He gloated about his health care treatment and actually told us that having COVID makes you stronger, that he never felt better. How many doctors recommend that? But still, regardless of COVID's superpower effects, the money. What about the money? He had a great excuse to basically buy votes by making funds available due to a very real cause. But he didn't act. Was it because he was above such things because they may look inappropriate? His history suggests that nothing is too inappropriate for him to do. Was he just too dumb to make the connection between payments and the goodwill it will generate? I guess he already handed out toilet paper in Puerto Rico, so that should be enough goodwill, maybe. I don't know. Who knows? Or does he just really despise all of us that much? And he really didn't care about helping out those that put him there in the first place? If I'm guessing, that is the real answer. It probably never entered his mind that people are struggling because, well, he only thinks about himself. So he let the rest of us eat COVID cake. This has been Tommy's Random Thought.